This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk.
No, so there's lots of different bacteria that live in your gut, and they can sort of help digest your food, digest different molecules that are in there, and release all these chemicals that then impact your body in so many different ways. They can get into your brain, into your gut cells. They sort of can digest carbohydrates that we can't, so it gets the most out of your food. And to maintain a good sort of healthy bacterial population in your gut, it's sort of meant to be, and sort of is in the scientific community, is deemed to be sort of really healthy thing to do. But eating lots of processed food, drinking alcohol, different things like that can change the bacteria that are in there, and less of these good compounds are made. So it's obviously going to have this less of this healthy effect on your body.
Just a little bit there from this week's guest on Over the Influence. What a lovely, lovely young woman. She's called Ellen Smith. She's around 15 months alcohol free. Started doing this when she was just 24 years old. And I'm saying just 24, it makes me sound like an absolute dinosaur. But doing this in her 20s, I just think absolutely big up your bad self. Ellen is 25 years old now. She's a PhD student based in Norwich, and as well, she's a fitness lover. We talk about her alcohol-free journey, how her love of fitness has grown, and Ben gets in there with all the gut questions as well. Let's get into this week's episode.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
When I decided to stop drinking at 30, I didn't know anybody else in my life who was sober. The idea of never drinking again was really scary, but I knew that I had to do it for my own mental health. My drinking had got out of control and it wasn't bringing me any joy anymore. However, I thought a life being alcohol-free would be dull and boring, and I was desperate to meet other people who had this experience and that I could learn from and also talk to them about it. I researched endlessly trying to find somebody that understood what I was going through. I read lots of Quitlit, etc., and I stumbled across the OTI podcast and how life-changing that was. I then joined the community a few months after it opened, and that really skyrocketed my AF journey. Meeting other people who were really cool, had great life stories, were really insightful, knew exactly what I was talking about, could offer support, advice, friendship, but also laughter, was game changing. These people have become my real life friends, and I'm really, really proud to say that not only am I alcohol free and loving it, but I know lots of people now that don't drink. And that has really helped me to stay on this sober path. So if you're considering stopping drinking, if you really enjoy the podcast, then please do join up to the community. Everyone says it's a game changer. And it's not just about stopping drinking. It's about finding out about what you want to do with the rest of your life.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to this week's episode of Over the Influence. Hopefully you're listening to this and the sun is still shining here in the UK. We don't get it often, and when we do, we just like to make the absolute most. And if you're tuning in for the first time, maybe you have just found us ahead of summer thinking, you know what, I quite fancy having a break from the booze. I'll listen to these two chumps wanging on about alcohol-free life. Well, allow us to introduce ourselves. My name is Sharon Hartley, 51 years old. I am based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Three kids, one husband and a beagle. Took a break from booze nearly 7 years ago, OMG. And yeah, fast forward to today, it still is, I say it all the time, hands down, the best thing I ever did. Drank too much, too quickly, far too often. Never thought I'd quit, actually, because, well, one, I never wanted to. Didn't think I could. I thought life would be absolutely abysmal without booze in it every single day. Turns out the opposite of that is true. So I'm coming up for 7 years. Ben Anderson, my lovely co-host, coming up for five. Is it next month or the month after, Ben?
Yeah, it'll be 5 years in July. On the 5th, 6th of July. I need to check that. I should know that. Hello, I'm Ben. By the way, I'm 36. I live in Liverpool. I am dad to baby Leo. I am stepdad to Alfie and Millie. I'm husband to Jem. And I removed alcohol initially for 3 months. I said, oh, right, lockdown, been drinking too much. I'm going to have a three-month break. Got to 3 months and felt really good. And thought, ah, crap, feel really good. I was going to go back to drinking, but I'm going to do 6 months. See how I feel after six. If I feel this good after three, surely I can't feel much better than this after six. Got to six and I felt better again. So I thought, right, let's do 12 months alcohol-free. Wouldn't it be cool to say I did 12 months without alcohol? Because I was fully intending to go back to drinking again. But then, objectively, alcohol-free life improved every part of my life. Relationships, work, motivation, happiness, physical, emotional, mental, everything got better. Everything felt better. And it was just undeniable. You know, a year without alcohol, I think having that marker of a year and just realizing just how much had changed and actually accepting that as well, actually going, ah, right, this is good for me. I'm a better person without alcohol. You know what? Now, nearly 5 years in, don't even think about it. Like, so delighted to be alcohol free. At the same time, as one of our fabulous community members said years ago, being alcohol-free is one of the least interesting things about me. That's how I feel now.
You know what? It's mad, isn't it? A couple of things you just said there. We will get to the guest in a minute. Ellen, thank you so much for your patience. This happens a lot when we start rambling. Two things. You can't argue with the fact that it gets better, and it's annoying. It's annoying. It's bloody annoying in the early days.
Mostly if you're having a break.
Yeah. Didn't want to do this, and yeah, it's right, it is. And then when I stop and think, and I'm just listening to you talking, then 5 years, like 5 years, yeah. That's half a decade there, half a decade of our friendship. Because obviously, when we first met, you were still a drinker and literally couldn't care less. You came in to edit the podcast and produce the podcast, which was marvelous, mm-hmm. and then got under your skin, and here you are now. 5 years later. Isn't that crackers? Mm. But isn't it brilliant?
It's fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous. And Over the Influence came into my life at exactly the right time.
Yeah,
didn't think, so I'd good. Never considered removing alcohol, because who does that? Who chooses to stop drinking? Well, turns out loads of people around the world, and it's growing. We've had millions of downloads on this podcast now from almost every country in the world. It's nuts. It's happening. It's not weird and odd anymore to choose to remove alcohol. Right, we really need to get to Ellen, because she's fabulous.
Let's stop. Right, okay. So I introduced myself and I stuck my age in there, 51. So I started doing this nonsense when I was 44. Ben, 36. I was getting mixed up. Ben's birthday's next month. Are you 37 next month?
I am, yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. Benny's knocking on as well. Today on the podcast, we're going to introduce to you. Don't give me the side eye
there. Knocking on at 37? Oh, my God. Sound like Alfie, our 16-year-old.
Oh, yeah, 37, so old.
Oh, we'll be celebrating your 40th in no time.
Right.
Anyway, I digress. It gives us great pleasure today to welcome the voice of youth to the podcast today. This is brilliant. You're like half my age. It's absolutely fantastic. Ellen Smith, more than a year alcohol-free, around 15 months now. Ellen is based in Norwich. She's very, very clever as well. Not only is she alcohol-free, she's super clever. She's a PhD student. And did I say your age then? 25. You're 25 and doing this. Ellen, welcome to Over the Influence. How on earth are you doing?
Hi, I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
We're really good. We're chuffed a bit, thank you, to have you on the podcast. And sorry for that very, very long intro. We try and keep them brief, and it never happens. Before we get into more about you, Ellen, and your story and what life was like as a drinker and what life is like now, just tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Yeah, so as you said, I'm a PhD student, so I work at the university here in Norwich, and I look at bacteria in your gut. That's sort of what my focus is, and it's my big passion. Science is sort of what I love, really. I could sit on a podcast and talk about that for hours and hours, so luckily I won't. But
hey, listen, you can.
I might ask you to. Yeah,
Ben may go there.
That's fine. as well, I also really enjoy fitness and sort of health and all things around that, and I post on Instagram, actually, sort of Instagram content just around my life and sort of my adventures, my journeys, my running. I really enjoy running, so I've been doing half marathons and marathons and things like that, and just everything I enjoy as well, really.
Absolutely fab. So, in fact, the reason you're here was, so obviously it would have been, we're in 2025 now, February 2024, mm-hmm. you posted, didn't you, on your Insta, when it was your 1 year alcohol-free milestone, and yeah. you tagged us in it, and we read it, and we saw your post, and we thought, you know what? Let's invite Ellen onto the podcast. So it's really good that you're here. Tell us a little bit about what life was like for you before you made the choice to remove booze at the age of 23. Have I got that right?
24. Yeah.
So bad at sums.
I mean, I'm only 25, so I haven't got a big long backstory of everything, but sort of I think you sort of start drinking around sort of 15, 16 when you're a teenager and things like that. And I never really had any problems. It was that sort of standard upbringing, really. You'd go to your friend's house and have a few ciders and sort of you'd have their mum looking after you and things like that. And that's sort of the happy memories I have with alcohol, really. And I won't lie, I do have those happy memories. And there's always that sort of original, when you first start drinking, it's that sort of pink cloud of oh, it was nice. And then sort of moving into going to uni, I did that very standard uni student sort of going on nights out. I was in different societies and we'd all go out drinking together, going to the clubs and getting drunk and coming back and feeling absolutely terrible the next day. And then sort of lockdown hit and the dreaded COVID hit when I was in my second year of uni. And I then found myself living alone at my first sort of work job. And I was drinking as if I was still a student, but alone in my house on my own. And that was where I sort of started to think, actually, I don't think this is a good idea. I don't think this is a great thing to do. I would wake up and instead of sort of having my friends to laugh and go, oh, remember what we did last night? It was that anxiety, but I was all on my own. It was the drunk texts, but I was sort of on my own and the anxiety and the stress of it was amplified. And it was, it sort of took me about 2 years to kind of think, no, let's do something about this. And that was sort of the accumulation of lots of small moments was when I sort of went, no, actually, I think it would be a good idea to stop drinking, at least for a little bit and see what happens. And from there, I sort of tried to look for podcasts and look for books, look for anything. And that's when I found Over the Influence, actually. And I remember I'd walk to work for the hour long walk that it would take me to get to work. And I'd listen to an episode and it would sort of slowly get in my mind of actually, no, I do want to do this. I hadn't sort of fully stopped. I hadn't given up then, but it was sort of slowly ticking in the back of my mind. Take a week off, take a couple of weeks off, take a break at this event. And then eventually in February last year, I just sort of went, actually, no, I really don't need to do this anymore. I can go out and have fun and I don't need to be drunk and it's great and it's fun. And I think you don't see many young people doing that these days. There's more and more people, but I think it was just that point where I was like, actually, no, this is it. This is what I want to try. And I did. And I'm a year later and sort of looking back with the greatest memories and a really happy outlook from it. So, yeah.
Amazing. Ellen, can we talk about, if you don't mind, some of those mm-hmm. small moments? Because yeah. you would, as an avid fan of the podcast from the description you've just given us of how you listen to Over the Influence, you'll have heard us talk loads about how you don't need to have a rock bottom to decide to mm-hmm. remove alcohol. That actually, you know, if we stopped seeing this thing so black and white and we did look at the grey a little bit more, you know, oh, well, I haven't had that big moment where my wife's left and I've been fired from my job and so I can keep drinking. Well, actually, no, because a series of small things can build up to a big thing. It doesn't need to be one big event, one singular moment to decide to change your outlook on booze. But like, what were some of those smaller moments for you?
I mean, a lot of them were sort of waking up to drunk texts that I'd sent and looking at them and feeling absolutely terrible, feeling the panic and that it was never anything really that bad. But when you're sort of on a hangover, when you're feeling really terrible, you're laid there in bed on your own and you're just like, oh my God, what have I done? What's going on? Why have I done this? That sort of panic, maybe weekend after weekend after weekend. Yeah, it starts your day, keeps coming every frequently, it sort of really starts to mount on you. I think other times, And this is a very niche experience. But if you've ever been hungover in a lab, in a science lab, it's horrible. It's the worst thing ever.
Funnily enough,
I haven't.
Have you, Ben?
No, never. No.
It's very bright.
In a lot of radio studios, to be fair.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Tell us more about that. Go on then. Describe that scenario, being hungover in a science lab, Ellen.
It's very bright. It's very noisy. There's often too much aircon and it's too cold and you want to be like cozied and warm somewhere. And it's just like, you've got to concentrate. You're often doing tiny little finicky sort of pipetting, tiny little things. And you've actually really got to be switched on, no handshakes, anything. And it's the worst. And I think I did that a few too many times that I probably shouldn't be admitting that. Sometimes I go into work at 6 o'clock in the morning now and I'm like, oh my God, imagine if I was doing this hungover. I can't believe I used to do this. And I'm in there just so happy now. So, yeah.
It's really interesting what you said as well. Sorry, Ben.
There you go.
You were saying that you were looking for alcohol-free content and still drinking, listening to the podcast. Ellen, the amount of people that this applies to, you know, and I think it's probably more common than we think. You know, I don't think people say, oh, I'm going to stop drinking now and now I've removed the alcohol and now I'm going to find an alcohol-free podcast. I think it works in the opposite way. It's like it's drip feeding, isn't it? It's drip feeding and it's planting that seed. And I'm really curious to know what difference it made, be it Over the Influence or whatever you had in your ears, or it might have been the books that you started reading. What difference did that make to you when you were at the stage where you were thinking about doing this?
I think the biggest difference that it kind of made was that I was hearing stories from normal people. I think that came a lot from Over the Influence, actually, when I listened to that. It was typically normal people that you would speak to, people like me that maybe didn't have this big rock bottom moment that was just sort of lots of small things, just sort of making small life changes and things like that. And it actually sort of, I related to it, even though it would be someone who's on a completely different life path to me, completely different age, completely different backstory, people with kids, whatever. But you could sort of find bits in their story and you'd go, actually, no, that's how I feel. That's me. And I was sort of starting to slowly piece together all these little parts and go, no, actually, I think this is something I'd like to try and like to do. And sort of those small bits of inspiration from people that you wouldn't expect to be these big inspirational people. It's not like inspirational speakers, it's not like influencers you see everywhere, it's just people with normal jobs and normal lives.
Yeah, completely.
That you just get to hear from and you don't often hear from them. And I think that's a really great sort of tool to have. And I think I'm quite lucky sort of stopping drinking in this day and age and being the age I am and sort of this year and stuff like that. I have all those resources and there's so much available, and listening to people's stories that look back and go, actually, when I stopped 20 years ago, we didn't have all this stuff. And you sort of think, well, I'm so lucky that I've got this as well. And I have these tools and resources. So, yeah.
It's funny, isn't it? Because like so often in life, we think of, like, for example, removing alcohol, we stop things that are bad for us, you know, for our mental health or for our physical health. But actually what you're talking about is that it's not necessarily that there are these big moments that are having these kind of big damaging impacts on your happiness, but it's stopping you from being happier. It's stopping you from being better, you know, like that's enough, isn't it? Like why do we just accept the anxiety? Do you know what I mean? Like why do we, like, actually, if it's okay, it's not kind of actively, you know, got me by the scruff of the neck and dragging me down and rock bottom.
Yeah.
But it's also stopping me from happier. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And things like, when I get drunk and go out with my friends, my boyfriend, I'd have little arguments with people. And I'm not the most argumentative person. I mean, my boyfriend might say otherwise, but I'm not the most argumentative person on the day to day, and I'd wake up and not remember them and have all these sort of little bits in my relationships with people that I just wouldn't know that had happened. And you'd just sort of be like, oh shit, like the panic and the fear that you'd have from that. And it's sort of, I now don't have any of that really. It's that sort of, everything's mellowed out. You don't have these big sort of lows when you're feeling anxious, anxiety, whatever, and you don't have these big highs of sort of all this adrenaline, all this energy that comes when you're drunk. It's sort of nice, mellow, happy life rather than chaotic.
I remember that exact feeling, that feeling. And it's dreadful, isn't it? And the reason I remember it is because I had it very recently. Nothing to do with drinking, of course, but I forgot to do something quite important. And I had that, you know, I didn't mean to do it. It was just, something slipped my mind. And I just, you know, and I, that horrible kind of that pit and that, I just had that, like, reminder of, I used to feel this all the time. Mm-hmm. And self-inflicted, you know, that, oh, God, what did I say? Oh, why did I say that? Oh, and it's a dreadful feeling, isn't it? Like, why do we accept that actually that's just part of the cycle of being a drinker? Like, no, I don't want it. Oh. Is it too early to talk about guts? Or, I think it's still too early to talk about guts.
Too early to talk about guts.
Okay. Yeah. Back to you then, Shaz, because that's what I want to ask Ellen about.
I knew you were going to go in with the guts and you were going to go down the science route. Something I won't do, like, because I'm just not clever enough, Ellen. And what I do want to do is go back to age, okay, because I think it is brilliant what you're doing. So Ben started doing this in his 30s. I started in my 40s.
Early 30s, because obviously now I'm, what did you say earlier, past it, knocking on a bit?
I said you're knocking on a bit, you're pushing towards 40. You can't argue with fact. Fact. You're 37. Well, yeah, well, yeah. 37 late, next month.
Late 30s, isn't it, that?
Late 30s. Yeah, you're no longer mid. You'd be late 30s next month. I'm early 50s.
So quickly.
early 50s.
But you don't look a day over 50.
Thank you. I was waiting for that. That was a rubbish compliment. But anyway,
Yeah.
So I did it in my 40s. You did it in your early 30s. Ellen, you have done this in your mid-20s. What is it like navigating an alcohol-free world as a student, doing what you're doing in your 20s? Because both myself and Ben have got zero experience of this because we did it a little bit later on.
Yeah, I think it's a mixed bag. It's definitely it's a challenging time, and it's a challenging time to give up, because I think everyone says in your 20s, you should be out partying, you should be out drinking, you should be out living your life. But at the same time, I sort of look at my life now as well. I have the most supportive friends I could ever ask for in this, the greatest people. They don't care. If anything, they're really pleased about it because they get a free lift everywhere we go because I'm not drinking, so I can drive.
Love that.
They're like, yeah, come on, let's go. You can drive us everywhere. And I think people my age are a bit more open about it. I think the awareness that people actually might not want to drink, whether it's sort of a personal reason, if it's a religious reason, and a cultural reason, people are a lot more open about it than I think in previous generations. But at the same time, there's still a bit of stigma around it. There's still that sort of, actually, do I want to be doing this? Am I doing something wrong? Is it the right decision to make? But I think for me personally, you listen to all these stories, all these people that say that they have given up alcohol and their only regret is that they didn't do it sooner. And I sort of sit with myself and go, if I'm feeling like I actually want to do this now, what's the harm? What am I going to do? Look back in 5 years and go, oh, I wish I didn't give up for that 1 year, 2 years, whatever. And 3 years, like, look back and what, my life was better? Like, what's it going to be? It's not like I'm making a bad decision. It's not like I'm choosing to drink just for those 2 years kind of thing. It's that I want to try and make a positive change. And if I look back and regret it, my life was happier, my life was better. Like, it's nothing bad. But I think as well, sort of this day and age of giving up drinking, as I said before, there's so many resources, there's so much out there, and there's so many good alcohol-free drinks as well.
Yeah.
And I think I appreciate that so much. Going places that you can order a mocktail, you can order whatever. I mean, I like Diet Coke as much as sort of most people like water. Like, I could drink it all day, every day. I shouldn't, but I want to. And so I'm more than happy to get a Diet Coke and sit there and chat with my friends and be sociable. And I feel like I don't need to drink anymore to do that. And I think that's some personal growth as well that I've been on as well. So, yeah.
Do you think as well?
Does your gut want you to drink Diet Coke all day, that was, every
day? No, it doesn't.
We're not there yet. We're not ready. Chaz is still
gone. One more. Hold that thought. Do you think that you doing what you're doing now, choosing not to drink at the age of 25, gives permission to other people, other young people within your circle that may be thinking, oh, I don't know. It gives them almost like a green light and a way to go, actually, you know, I'm thinking about cutting back, or I don't want to get wrecked either tonight. Because I do feel, well, you're going to tell me this because I don't know. Like I said, I've got no experience of it. When Ben did this in his 30s and I did it in my 40s, you know, people have got a lot to say. They've got a lot to say about your choices and you choosing not to drink. And, you know, yes, of course, there's a lot of positivity depending on who it is, but there's some negativity as well. If you've been drinking with, you know, groups for a long time, in your situation, what is that like, Ellen?
I think it really depends on who you're with as well. I think a lot of my friends are quite headstrong people. So if they were going to drink, they'll do it anyway. But if they weren't, they don't need that green light person to say, actually, no, I'm not going to. If they don't want to, they won't. And I think that's, I'm quite lucky in that friendship group that nobody sort of looks at you as the outsider that's not. It's like, oh, that's your choice. Good for you. That's a really great choice for you to make. But I do see sort of sometimes the people I'm with will drink less. And I don't know if that's them feeling more comfortable to not, or if it's sort of a, oh, Ellen's not, maybe I shouldn't sort of, I don't know if I feel like I should. But that's, I think, their decisions to make. It's not like I'm sort of, you won't drink with me, like, all for it, do whatever you want to do, guys, sort of like that. But I've been out sort of to clubs and to concerts, to bars, and not drunk, and the people I'm with haven't as well, sometimes as well, and it doesn't change the enjoyment that I have and the enjoyment that they have as well. I think sort of I used to be a dancer when I was little, so I could go to a club and dance till 3 o'clock in the morning sober, and I'll have the best time. I went salsa dancing with some of my friends, and we were there till 1-2 in the morning, and I was sober as a judge, and it was the best night ever. So yeah, I think sort of, yeah, young people they're sort of, the opinions are changing, but I think a lot of it's sort of that people are sort of more, if I want to, I will, but I don't think it's sort of forcing opinions on people as well. That sort of, yeah.
Do you care what other people think of you, Ellen?
Depends who it is. I think for the people who I would choose to go out with, choose to hang out with, choose to be friends with, I do care what they think about me in sort of certain ways, but sort of whether they care that I'm not drinking, I don't really care. Anyone really, I don't really think it's anybody's opinion of what you do in that respect. But I mean, sort of, it's your own personal choice to do that, and it shouldn't be sort of influenced by what other people might be thinking that you're doing it. And I mean, I'll be honest, when I first sort of stopped drinking, I did come with my, I had a little sort of imaginary list of excuses that was, oh, I've driven, so I can't be. Oh, I've got to be up in the morning, so I'm not going to. And I think that was my comfort blanket to start with, that I'd sort of had that list of excuses, because I kind of did care that people would be like, oh, why are you not? Are you pregnant? Are you this? Are you that? And it's like, no, I've got my set excuse ready. But now it's just, I think people get used to it and they know you, and they don't care. So why should I care? And it's like, yeah, no, I'm not. It is what it is, that kind of thing.
The reason I ask is because I wonder why. Like, why were our generations, because apparently both me and Sharon are past it now. As a collective, we're very old, according to Sharon. But, you know, like, there was definitely, like, I wanted to conform. When I was a teenager going into my 20s, there was definitely pressure to conform and not stick out. I had to be out because everyone from school was out. And, you know, we'll all talk about it on when we're playing rugby and, you know, and that thing. And if I, and I, the FOMO of, oh, that thing happened in Snobs and, oh, I can't believe, you know. And I felt this pressure to conform and do what everyone else does. But But your generation doesn't seem to have that same thing. Like, you lot don't really care what other people think about you. You care about, you know, like you say, your close friends and family and the people actually, you know, really mean something to you. But you don't give a shit about what, you know, Joe Bloggs says, who might, you know, is in your life because you study the same course or you work in the same place or you go to the same gym, you know. Like why? Why are you all so free and carefree? It's annoying.
I don't know.
Why didn't happen for us?
I mean, the only thing I could ever think of would be social media and that exposure to how so many people live their lives. And obviously it could go either way, but I think for me and for a lot of people I know, it's that we are all different. We all live these different lives. What's the point in trying to stop other people doing what they want to do? Other people could see it as sort of like, no, you have to do what I do. You have to live the way I want to. And it's that exposure of they're doing it, so I have to do it. But I think for me, the beauty of it is that you can see all these people. Some people want to go out and drink. Some people want to go and play football. Some people want to go and do dance, do science, do whatever, do all these different things. And they have all their different hobbies. And I think just let people do what they want to do and make their own choices, because eventually you will end up settling into who you are and yourself. And I think whether it's just that little bit of soul searching and growing that I've done in myself, that's sort of like, this is my life and how I want to do it, this is how I want to live, why should I sort of let other people stop me? Why should I try and stop somebody else doing what they want to do? Within reason, but yeah.
Sharon, you're a lot older than I am. Did you feel...
Stop yourself. Sorry.
So I was saying that you're a lot older than I am. A lot.
Right, yeah.
And did you feel a kind of a pressure to conform and be the same as everyone else? Or do you feel like where you grew up, when you grew up, like Ellen's just been saying, oh, we're all different, so, you know. Where was it? Like, where did you land?
Oh, God.
I was much pressured to conform, going to be honest.
I never felt pressured, but it was just sort of like assumed that this is what you did. So I'm trying to think, you know, what I was like at 25, where Ellen is now. I mean, I had my first child at 26, but prior to that, like uni days and early 20s, it was party, party, party. And I never felt a pressure to be part of that. I was quite happy to lead it. Because that's what you did. Do you know what I mean? It was like, well, obviously you're going to start work and go to all these free events, and obviously you're going to get drunk and you're going to hang out with your teenage mates and get drunk because that's what you do. It was just almost like a given, really. I think as I got older, actually, I felt more pressured to be the clown, the idiot, the entertainer, the performer, the drunken dick. Oh, Sharon will go first. She'll be first on the dance floor. She'll do it. Weirdly, that happened as I got older. And that's when, you know, I started thinking, oh, man alive, you know, and I need to make a change here. This is rubbish. But I never felt pressured as a young woman drinking. It was just the norm. I think that's how I can describe it. It's just what you did. And then, you know, Ellen, I've said this to every young guest on the podcast.
Well, see, if she could, she'd reach out.
And no, I just squeeze your cheeks. I just give your cheeks a squidge. And give you a
Sharon.
Oh, well done. Yeah. Auntie Sharon's very proud of you. Because joking apart, you know, who knows where life would take you and who knows what it would be like if you carried on drinking. But if you did and it was excessive, you know, you'd probably save yourself a couple of decades here of pain. You know, going further down the line. But who knows? You know, who knows? Nobody's got a crystal ball. But doing it now at your age, and like you say, where you've got a very supportive, sober social media, you know, I think alcohol-free Insta, sober Insta, or however you want to call it, it's a brilliant place. You've got all the resources. You've got alcohol-free drinks. Again, when myself and very old Ben started doing this in the dark ages, there was this god-awful drink called Caliber. And that's about it. You know, it was like literally one alcohol-free beer. It's changed. That was a rambling answer. Ben, I don't even know if I answered it, actually.
What do you think, Ellen? I'll let you decide that one, did she?
Yeah, I think so.
Thank you, Ellen. Thank you.
I don't know if I answered half of the questions. So.
Can we talk about guts now?
Here we go.
Okay. The reason that I want to ask you about guts, Ellen, is because I think when you remove alcohol, that's kind of, you know, you focus on that. When you're starting out, just every day that your head hits the pillow, we always say this, if you haven't had a drink that day, if you've done nothing else but you haven't had a drink, what a successful day that's been. Well done you. That's brilliant. I think the further you get into it, it does make you more concerned about other areas of your health, I think. You know, I've removed alcohol. I'm obsessed with my Oura ring at the moment. I've spoken about it in fact, I think I may have spoken about my Oura ring that I got for Christmas almost as much as Sharon spoke about her book. Oh, no.
I haven't mentioned my book, The Life-Changing Magic of Quitting Alcohol. Stop Drinking and Start Living, available now. I've not mentioned it for weeks,
You haven't, apart from on today's premium pod. But, you know, you do start thinking about other aspects of your health. Now, your gut is something that you trust. Do you know what I mean? You got to trust your gut. That's as far as my gut knowledge goes. I say that. I've heard things, and I've, for example, how important your gut health is. Sharon, do you know anything about gut health? Did you just think it's something that you had to trust, not nurture?
Okay. Gut's connected to the brain, isn't it?
Well, this is the thing I wanted to ask about next, because you are what you eat comes from the link between the gut and the brain, right?
Yeah.
Ellen, I feel like we need to stop talking and pass over to the soon-to-be Dr. Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I'm at no way the highest level to be talking about this. So there's probably going to be hundreds of people looking down at me going, why are you talking about this? This isn't your...
Listen, you're far qualified than something, man. I mean,
my
Ellen,
goodness,
come on.
Yes.
You're a PhD student. You'll do for
them. Oh, yeah. A lot of the products that the bacteria in your gut actually make can then get into your bloodstream, and then they can then go up into the blood that goes up to your brain. And some of these chemicals pass into the brain and then can affect your brain chemistry. So that's kind of where that is, that gut-brain axis, it's called.
Okay, so just, I'm not saying that me and Sharon are idiots, but can you start at the beginning and explain this whole thing as if we were?
Okay. I've been into schools and done this with children, so I can do it at that. That would be really
that's
well.
The approach. That's the level.
Start there.
So, okay.
Where should we start? In your gut, so in your intestine, small intestine and large intestine, there's different bacteria that can live in there. So little tiny organisms that can live in your gut. And some of them can be bad for you. Some of them can be dangerous. So you eat food that's contaminated, food that's not cooked properly, and that's what gives you food poisoning, makes you really ill. Not happy with those. That's part of what I study as well, actually. I look at some of the bacteria that can cause food poisoning. So but then there's also the good bacteria. So these are probiotics. That's what they're called, probiotics.
You can drink them from the telly.
Yeah, they're often in Actimel, Yakult, other brands are available. And so they live in your gut, and the ones that are in there change over your life, and also depending on your diet and alcohol consumption as well, actually.
Well, let's save that one, because I would definitely want to ask about the impact of alcohol on the gut.
I can't tell you any more specifics than that, because that's not my deep dive remit into that.
Fine.
I can go and read and come back to you if you ever need.
Why not?
I mean, I have in my spare time. Sometimes if I've got an hour where I'm not meant to be doing my actual work, I'll be like, oh, alcohol in the gut, and go for a deep dive into that. But if I've retained it, who knows? So there's lots of different bacteria that live in your gut, and they can sort of help digest your food, digest different molecules that are in there, and release all these chemicals that then impact your body in so many different ways. They can get into your brain, into your gut cells. They sort of can digest carbohydrates that we can't, so it gets the most out of your food. And to maintain a good sort of healthy bacterial population in your gut, it's sort of meant to be, and sort of is in the scientific community, is deemed to be sort of a really healthy thing to do. But eating lots of processed food, drinking alcohol, different things like that can change the bacteria that are in there, and less of these good compounds are made. So it's obviously going to have this less of this healthy effect on your body.
Okay, so if I don't actively look after my gut, what could the consequences be?
That's a whole can of worms. I think...
Okay.
To actively look after your gut, I mean, you really just need to eat lots of fibre, fruits, vegetables, which is typically what people should be doing. having a healthy, balanced diet, obviously not drinking alcohol, you've got a big tick there. Like, that's a major factor that sort of impacts health in many, many ways as well. But to sort of, if you really did have a terrible diet and a terrible lifestyle that would sort of impact your gut health, a lot of sort of diseases in your gut could occur. So sort of intestinal cancers and things like that, you're just at a higher risk of developing these things, IBS, different irritable bowel sort of conditions as well. And it just sort of generally impacts your life in a negative way. But there are links with sort of a poor microbiome and poor mental health as well. So obviously that blood, brain, sort of gut axis, all of that being connected is quite strong there as well.
So you literally are what you eat?
Yeah, pretty much.
Chaz, I know that I'm dominating this bit. I hope you don't mind.
Please, carry on.
It's just obviously, you know, I'm very interested in the science. I am actually interested in the science. But again, Ellen, just a quick reminder, please use really simple words, yeah, because I really want to understand it. But
like,
I was about to try and repeat something that Ellen just said. That's why I paused and realised I can't remember the exact word.
Stop it.
You
get the wrong
microbiome,
word.
Biomes. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at your Instagram, mm-hmm. Ellen. Nearly 16,000 followers on there.
That's blimey. A lot.
That's a lot of followers. Yeah. But the first thing that you've got on there is in your description is fitness lover, in capital letters, lover, fitness lover.
Yeah.
And obviously just, you know, hearing you talk about that then, health, fitness, it's obviously something that you're really passionate about, but mm-hmm. like you actually enjoy it.
Yeah.
Me and Sharon were talking earlier for our premium podcast.
This wasn't for the world to hear.
I won't go into full detail about it, but we were talking about how naturally, you know, the people that will go, you know, the people, you are the people, people who will go and do a really difficult exercise session, mm-hmm. and they're buzzing afterwards, and they're like, oh yeah, God, I feel so good. The endorphins are all rushing around my body. I'm going to speak for me here, Sharon.
Lump me in with it, Ben. I'm with you. I'm with you, brother.
We old people, like, I get to the, like, if I've just done like a weight session with Richie, my personal trainer, that me and Gem share because we can't afford to have one on our own. But anyway, Richie, we go to his garage. He's great. We love Richie. But like after, like I finish and I go, oh, thank God that's finished. That was really hard. Oh, I can't wait to go home and sit down.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have that natural, you know, how, like, why do you think that you love it?
I mean, it started that, and this is digging into some sort of a few years back and sort of a very different mindset that I had. It started out sort of my fitness journey to sort of look better. That's where I kind of came from. I didn't like how I looked. I wanted to lose a lot of weight, look different, and it kind of started there. And it was quite a negative thing in my life. And then COVID happened, lockdown happened. I couldn't go to the gym. Sort of all of that was ripped away. And I started going out and running or sort of just doing little workouts at home. And I started my Instagram sort of around then. And everything kind of changed into sort of, I'm doing this because I want to enjoy something with my day. I'm stuck in a house. At that point, I was living with my parents. It was sort of, I'm stuck alone in the house with my mum, my dad and my brother. I want some time for me. I could go out and do a run for an hour. And that was my me time. And it sort of started out like that. And just progressively, I just sort of fell in love with getting better at things. So going to the gym and being stronger in each day or improving in some way, running faster than I did last time, or just being less out of breath than I was the last time, running further, things like that. It's sort of finding little milestones that boost my mood every day and things like that. So if things seem difficult, if sort of doing a PhD is a lot of work, a really hard work, and it can be quite demoralizing sometimes when things aren't going well. But if I can go to the gym and go, oh, actually, no, I've achieved something today. I've lifted a heavier weight. I've run further than I have ever done before today. It's those little boosts in my mood in the long term when you sort of watch them accumulate. As I was saying earlier, I was having lots of accumulations of negative things. I've kind of swapped that. And it's now these loads and loads of positive things that slowly your mood kind of just builds and builds and builds. I think that's sort of why and how I fell in love with it. finding all these little ways that I could improve and become better at things.
Mm. Love that. And how has removing the booze then impacted your health and fitness journey?
Do you love it even more?
I do. Yeah, it's sort of, if you've ever had to wake up and go to the gym hungover as well, that's horrible. Another one to add to the list of horrible things to do. But alcohol is sort of awful for health and fitness, obviously, but you can't recover. Your sleep is impacted. You feel horrific. And it showed in how I would go to the gym. So I'd go and I'd put in all this effort and I'd try and eat really well and sort of be my best self and make all these improvements. But then if I would go out on the weekend and get really drunk and hungover, and it would sort of not undo everything, because you're not, but it would just sort of knock on effects, and it wouldn't put me sort of those few steps ahead that I was trying to do. And now without that, I'm improving so much better. I feel like I could wake up on a Sunday and go for a big long run for 20 kilometers and feel amazing afterwards, and not have that sort of, oh my God, you went out last night, you feel like absolute death this morning. And everything's just infinitely so much better. Yeah. And I don't think how many have I done now? Done 3 half marathons and a full marathon. And I would never have been able to do all the training, get to that point, run the race and do as well as I did and run the races that I did. If I'd have been drinking, it would just never have happened. So I think it's been a really positive thing.
It's brilliant. So nice to hear that.
Do you, every time you go to the gym, do you want to go?
Oh, no. No. Some days it's an absolute chore.
I'm really glad you said that.
Yeah, that's good. It's reassuring. Reassuring for us.
You know Chris Van Tulliken, mm-hmm. Ellen? Have you heard?
Yeah.
He wrote, Dr. Chris Van Tulliken, who wrote Ultra Processed People,
yeah.
Big smash hit book of 2024, Sharon. Yours is the big smash hit book of 2025. Yes.
Thank you, Ben.
Yours
thank
came
you.
Out in January.
Life-changing
yes.
magic. Mm-hmm. It's out now.
Quitting alcohol, stop drinking, start living.
Start living.
Yeah, Sharon Hartley. I'm still gutted that you didn't put... have you gotten a middle name, Sharon?
I've got 2.
Why weren't they the initials on the front of the book? Why did you just go Sharon Hartley?
Because we'd run out of space, because it's Sharon Patricia Teresa Hartley.
No, I mean like a...
SPT Hartley.
PT Hartley.
SPT, there you go, what a gift. If and when I can ever be asked exercising. Anyway, carry on.
He's doing a podcast for the BBC with his brother, and it's called What's Up Docs. And I've started listening to it, and they had this brilliant psychologist on talking about willpower and motivation. And what she was saying, this was one of those moments, I'd never thought about it like this before. And I think it is one of those click moments for me, where she said, I go to the gym every weekday because that's my routine. And I've created that habit now. So there's no stress in my brain about it. Like my brain, you know, it knows it. But some days she'll wake up and she says that she has to have a conversation with herself. You know, she'll go almost like she's speaking to a child. Come on, you got to go. No, I don't want to go. Look, you said that you were going to do this because this is good for you. Didn't you say that to me? Yeah, I did, but I've changed my mind. Right, okay, I get that. But why don't we just go? Why don't you just put your trainers on, get in the car and go, and then we can have another chat when we get there. When she gets there, right, I still don't want to go in. Right, but look, we're here now. We might as well go in. You've made all this effort to get ready and drive to the gym. Fine, I'll go in. You stop bothering me about it. And actually, I, as someone who wants to be someone like you, Ellen, who is a fitness lover, not just keeps fit because that's the right thing to do to be healthy and mentally and physically, but someone who actually loves doing it, is that I think that you just love it. I think that you just go, yeah, God, I've woken up and I cannot wait to feel knackered. But actually, that's not the case. You're just better, I am, at dealing with uncomfortable, yeah. I think, is what I took. Does that make sense?
9 times out of 10, yeah. If it's a sunny day like this, I will look out there and go, no, I really want to go and run. It's going to be amazing. But I think that's mostly just the sun. Because you never see the sun in the UK. So, but sort of early mornings going to the gym and things like that, God, it's a drag to get me out. But I have a 5-minute alarm 5 minutes after my normal alarm in case I'm feeling extra lazy and I want to have those 5 minutes. And I lay there in bed talking to myself, going, no, you've got to do this. You've got to get up. You promised yourself. And it's my sort of 5 minute delay if I really need it. But after that, straight out the door, you just kind of got to drag yourself there. But once you get there, once I'm there, I sort of get there. It's only a 5 minute walk down the road. It's like, why would I not go? It's right over the road. And I get there and you sort of get one or two exercises in and you see the progress. You see the joy. There's people in there who I see every day who sort of come and say hi, and you sort of find your friends, you find your happy place. And if not, just put on loads of loud music and just hope for the best, really. Mm. Put on music that you like and try to trick yourself into being happy. And that usually helps.
Yeah. I'm sure that I had those petulant child conversations with myself when I was removing alcohol. Like, I don't have them anymore. I think it's, you know, I suppose it's a habit that I don't drink, you know, and therefore I don't have to think about it anymore. But I think I need to have petulant child conversations. I need to talk to that petulant child like an adult. I need to bring the adult into the conversation when it comes to health and fitness. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you expanding on that. I know that we've got no time left now, Shaz.
We're out of time. We're absolutely out of time. No, it's all right. Ellen, it's been
that.
A pleasure. Yeah, it's been so lovely to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. If there's somebody listening now and they fancy following your fitness journey, give your Insta a plug. Where can they find all the info?
Yeah, so it's Instagram. It's ellen.k.fitness. I think that's it.
And that's K as in the initial K.
The initial K.
Ellen.k.fitness.
Yeah, that's
fabulous.
The one.
Ellen Smith, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.